Only as free as a padlocked prison door. Only as strong as our love for this land. Only as tall as we stand. For here is a land full of power and glory.
Some of us are illegal, and others not wanted. Our work contract's out, and we have to move on.
600 miles to the Mexican border. They chase us like rustlers, like outlaws, like thieves.
Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita. Adios, mi amigo, Jesus, Maria.
A fireball of thunder, it shook all the hills.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A strike of more than 300 Teamsters in Billings has idled buses, stopped trash collection, and closed the city's library for the third business day in a row. Union members walked off the job on Saturday after rejecting the city's final contract offer. Seniority and longevity pay are among the key disagreements between the union and the city. The mayor has indicated he will begin to use supervisors and hire temporary workers rather than return to the negotiating table.
Sci-fi has become reality for some judicial workers in Mexico. The government has begun implanting microchips under the skin of more than 160 employees in the country's attorney general headquarters. The chips are intended to grant certain employees access to secure areas. The chips will also help officials keep track of who has access sensitive information. There are plans to start tagging key members of the military, the police, and the office of President Fox. The process is nothing new to Mexicans, as more than 1,000 citizens have received implants that store their medical data. Currently, there are plans to incorporate tracking capabilities into some chips, so in the case of a kidnapping, a crime that is rampant in parts of Mexico, it will be easier to locate the victim.
Community and labor groups held a rally in Buffalo on Monday, urging the state's legislature to override New York Governor Pataki's veto of a minimum wage boost. Pataki justified denying New Yorkers a $2 wage increase over 2 years, saying the legislation would hurt small business owners. But New York's Working Families Party disagrees, saying that most small businesses already pay their workers more than the $5.15 minimum. It's been 7 years since the last raise in the federal minimum wage, and during that time, congressional lawmakers gave themselves 6 raises, adding up to more than $23,000 a year.
The Korean Labor Ministry has charged Burger King and McDonald's for violating that country's labor laws. According to the ministry, the two companies didn't pay miners proper wages and made them work illegal hours. A national survey released in May said that more than 200,000 teenage workers were exploited by the international franchises. It also said that 20.5% of the teen employees worked more than 7 hours a day, a violation of South Korea's Labor Standard Act.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Fewer than 32,000 new jobs were created in July, the least amount for any month this year, according to the latest numbers from the Department of Labor. The DOL had to do some backpedaling for May and June because job gains were actually 61,000 less than originally stated. If George Bush doesn't create a couple million new jobs by November, he'll be the first president in 72 years to have presided over a net job loss.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Getting fired is one of the sourest experiences you can have. Unless, of course, you're the head honcho of a major corporation. Far from sour, getting booted from the top suite can be a mighty sweet experience. Take the recent case of Sir Philip B. Watts, the former chairman of Shell Oil, which is based in London. He became known to many as Philip the Finagler after it was discovered in an internal investigation that, on his watch, Shell had been cooking its books Enron style, claiming to own way more oil reserves than it actually has. Thanks to this illegal accounting, the company now faces several investigations, major fines, and class action lawsuits. I say, old boy, a bit of a sticky wicket, that. So sticky that last March, Shell's board asked Sir Philip to depart, leave, go away, skittle-scattle. But now, it's been revealed that the board generously eased the egress of Chairman Watts by handing him a sweet severance package of $1.9 million. Imagine what he would have gotten had he simply been Phil Watts and was a worker bee down in Shell's accounting hierarchy. But why have a title if it doesn't bring you special treatment? So instead of being cuffed and hauled out of the building by the bobbies, Sir Philip got a golden parachute to soften his landing. His severance package was the least of it. In addition, he'll also have a $1 million annual pension to comfort him, a stock award worth another $1 million, and a $1.5 million salary payment. Talk about enjoying your golden years. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you own some Shell stock, you might share the outrage of other shareholders at this cavalier giveaway of your corporate funds. Pensions Investment Research Consultants is a London firm that represents institutional shareholders, and it's demanding new rules to give shareholders the power to approve or reject such golden parachutes. Connect with them at pirc.uk.co. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our midweek program, Wednesday, the 11th of August. 83 days to regime change. It looks like they're really ginning up this October surprise, and it looks like it's going to be, you know, it's going to be war in Iran increasingly. And you can still enter our contest. We'll see. I mean, who knows? Go to TomHartman.com and click on the message boards, and you can post there. What do you think the October surprise is going to be? Of course, We'll wrap that one up on November 3rd. Some interesting discussion already taking, quite a bit of interesting discussion, actually, on our message board taking place there. And, of course, you can drop into the chat room. Go to TomHartman.com and click on chat room. Greetings, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. We are broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. And with archives, White Rose Society, as well as archives on the website, TomHartman.com, that Mike Toth is kind enough to pull together and maintain for us. Anyhow, the U.S. charge against Iran is really cranking up, and I want to get into this in considerable detail. We'll do this in the third hour of our program today. The ante keeps getting upped, and it's just becoming quite obvious to me that that these guys are willing to literally allow people to die or kill people to establish political power. Now, I realize it sounds very, very cynical, but if you the cover story of In These Times magazine this month, or this every other week, I guess it is, they knew, and they go through, and I have it here. We've done several shows on it. No need to recap it right now, but it is absolutely, irrefutably, documentably clear that before the Bush administration chose to go to war against Iraq, in fact, even before September of 2002, when they raised this issue in order to spin the election cycle in 2002 and try and regain control of the Senate, which they successfully did by getting Mrs. Carnahan out of office and Max Cleland out of office, using just this issue and the Homeland Security Department issue. I mean, they have figured out that you take some really big, outrageous political issue and you place it about 2 months before the election, and then in the 6 weeks before the election, you can hammer your political opponents in ways that they don't have time to respond, particularly if their response is at all thoughtful or nuanced. If it doesn't fit into a soundbite, they're toast. And they did this with the war on Iraq, and it's increasingly obvious and documentable that even then, even in September of 2002, when they were saying, please vote to give the president the authority, if all else fails, and if he can prove in such a way that he's willing to sign a sworn statement to the United States Congress that he can prove that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, a connection with al-Qaeda, and intends to strike the United States, those three things, that he will then have the authority to attack Iraq. This was the October surprise of 2002, and sure enough, it helped the Republicans take the House and Senate. And this time it's going to be Iran. They are already ginning this thing up. Speaking about the absurdities of this thing, this John Kerry, in a way, you could say, in a way, walked into a trap. In a way, it was a trap that he couldn't avoid walking into. I think he could have handled it a little differently. But, you know, I'm not him, and I'm not running his campaign. But George Bush has been repeatedly saying, it's called the straw man argument. It's where you create a straw man, an artificial argument, and then you say, is that right or wrong? And really, there's a whole different issue. See, when the United States Senate voted to give the president authority to attack Iraq, that resolution was actually a very complex piece of legislation that required the president to go before the United Nations and required the president to exhaust all other remedies, which he did not do, and required the president to certify in writing, essentially under oath, to swear that he had exhausted all remedies, that Iraq did definitely have weapons of mass destruction, that they intended to use them against the United States, they represented an imminent threat. And George Bush did sign a document to that effect in the spring of 2003, before he invaded Iraq. And that's what John Dean talks about in his book Worse Than Watergate, which he says that by doing that, when Bush knew, he knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, he knew that there was no operational connection between Iraq and al-Qaeda. He lied to the American people about it. Absolutely, clearly documented. And the right-wing spin machine is out there. Well, you know, everybody else in the UN thought that was the case. No, they didn't. If they had, they would have voted to attack Iraq. And they weren't. Well, Bill Clinton thought that. Well, maybe back in 1996. In any case, it's tragic. It's tragic that we have an administration that's willing to play the big lie card and willing to play it with the lives of our children and our friends. Not to mention the lives of other human beings who value their lives every bit as much as Americans do. How many more people have died in the invasion of Iraq than died in 9/11, even though there was no connection between the two? So anyhow, Bush puts out this question. Knowing what you know today, Kerry, would you have voted for this invasion? Would you still have voted for that piece of legislation? And Kerry walks right into it. He says that he would have... Let's get the exact language here. He said, "Oh, actually, I've got a clip of it. I can just play it for you. That's a whole lot easier. Very straightforward." Kerry says that he absolutely would have done the vote, but he wouldn't have followed through. And I think he should have also just pointed out the Bush lie. Anyhow, here's his response.
To any challenge, and I'll answer directly. Yes, I would have voted for the authority. I believe it was the right authority for a president to have. But I would have used that authority, as I have said throughout this campaign, effectively. I would have done this very differently from the way President Bush has.
Yeah. So nowhere in there does he say, I would have invaded Iraq. So Bush says it's an important question. The American people deserve a clear yes or no answer. And then after Kerry says that, he says Kerry now agrees it was the right decision to go into Iraq. So he's taking Kerry's words, twisting them, lying about them, and spinning them back out. He says, we did the right thing and the world is better off for it. Do you get the significance of what George Bush is saying when he says that? First of all, Kerry is not supporting that position, although it's being spun that way by Bush and the right wingers in the media to the point that I think this is going to push a lot of the Kucinich and Dean and Nader voters away from Kerry, which is exactly what Bush wanted to do. Bush is playing chess. And in that answer, I think John Kerry was playing checkers, unfortunately, or he thought that the American people were able to follow a chess game. And the American people may well be able to follow a chess game. As Thomas Jefferson said, our quote for the day, whenever the people are well informed, they can be trusted with their own government. The problem is they're not well informed because our media is now an entertainment industry, our news industry by and large. And if you can't say it in 5 seconds, it doesn't fly. But George Bush now is essentially saying, knowing that there were no weapons of mass destruction there, knowing that Iraq represented no threat to us or to its neighbors, knowing that they had no nuclear program, knowing that they had no biological or chemical warfare program, they didn't even have an air force. We had destroyed that back in the 90s. He still would have invaded. It's hard to, as the Washington Post, Scott Lay in the Boston Globe points out, it's hard to believe that any rational president, today's Boston Globe, would have done that. Colin Powell himself is saying, you know, oops. And yet it's what Himmler said, tell a big enough lie and tell it loud enough and often enough, or Goebbels said, and people will believe it. And that's what Bush is doing. It's what he's been doing since 2002. And, you know, as they point out, clearly they're trying to find a line of political attack. Really the attack here should be against Bush. I mean, Bush should be the one defending what he did. And so he's got Kerry on the defensive. This is, you know, it's a political masterstroke, I got to say. Karl Rove is a genius. He's an evil genius, but he's a genius. For Kerry to say, I would have voted to give the president the leverage, essentially, to get the UN, to get the inspectors in there and all that sort of thing, And then for Bush to say he now agrees it was the right decision to invade Iraq. And for the media to go along with this is just absolutely mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. The entire answer of John Kerry included four questions. Of course, these were more than 10-second sound bites, so they didn't make it into most of the mainstream media. But they're very important, I think. He says, my question to President Bush is, why did he rush to war without a plan to win the peace? Why did he rush to war on faulty intelligence and not do the hard work necessary to give America the truth? Why did he mislead America about how he would go to war? Why has he not brought other countries to the table in order to support American troops in the way we deserve it and relieve the pressure from the American people? Yes, I know Moldova has 43 troops there. There are four not hypothetical questions like the president's, but real questions that matter to Americans, Kerry said. And I hope you'll get the answers to those questions because the American people deserve them. Good luck. I have a feeling we'll be waiting a long time for George Bush to even acknowledge that these questions have been asked. In fact, he never will acknowledge that these questions have been asked. As, in my opinion, Kerry shouldn't have acknowledged his question, but it's done. So let's try and, you know, set the record straight, make it clear what's actually going on here. 20 minutes past the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Acts through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
He used to carry his guitar in a gun in sack. Go sit beneath the tree by the railroad track. Bold engineer.
And welcome back. Drumming with the rhythm that the drivers made. I'm going to do another contest here. That was great fun yesterday. Let's try it out again. Only this time, what I'm going to do, we're going to play a campaign ad. We found this treasure trove of campaign ads. And we're going to play a campaign ad in just a moment here on the air. And I'm going to give away and if you're calling now to enter, don't. Wait until the ad has at least started playing. And I'm going to put people right on the air. I'm just going to grab the calls rather than having Ira grab them and, you know, screen callers and whatnot. I'm just going to grab the calls and toss them on the air. And I'll ask you your city and state and who you think it is. And we're going to give away a bumper sticker, It Takes a Village Idiot bumper sticker. But before we get to that, I need to clear the lines off here. 1-866-889-8894, a number Kodak in Durham, North Carolina. One of our regular listeners on Sirius is on the line. Our truckers, hey, Kodak, how's life?
Life is beautiful, Tom. It's a gorgeous day here in the state of North Carolina today.
Great.
Regarding the question, what was the proper response for John Kerry to George Bush's question. If you look at the different scenarios or responses that he could have had, all of them would have played into his hand because, like you say, it's not a legitimate argument.
And it wasn't a legitimate question, yeah.
Naturally, our response would be we had no business there.
Yeah.
But that is like asking a politician not to be a politician in order to give the correct answer.
Yeah.
One way he can deflect these, I mean, because this was the first shot across the bow. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are going to be others.
Yeah.
And since we have the internet, that can, since he's going to be a president for the people, just ask the internet, put the question on the internet, how did American people want to answer George Bush?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Completely out of the arena, and then he can deal and say, "Well, I'm here to deal on other issues that I'm all."
You know, Richard Nixon handled one like this. I forget, frankly, what the question was, but I remember his answer very well. It was in a press conference, and he was responding to something that had been raised by, as I recall, people who were against the war. And somebody asked him this question, and he looked at the reporter for a second, and he said, "No, and I don't still beat my wife." Because, you know, there's that famous question, are you still beating your wife? Well, how do you answer that, Kodak?
She enjoys it? No, I have no idea.
You can't. I mean, that's the problem.
If you say
no, then, you know, because the question implies something. The question implies that you were before. And Bush's question, you know, knowing what you know now, would you still have voted to invade Iraq? Well, Kerry never voted to invade Iraq.
Exactly.
And you know, so it's a phony question to begin with.
I need to get that retraction out there in case my wife is listening.
Yeah,
thank you
very
much, and I would never.
That's just Kodak's odd sense of humor there. Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, well, thank you for the call, Kodak. And
you
know, this is I think you're absolutely right that this is something that we need to put out to America. I'm going to actually do the contest after the next break because we've only got about a minute and a half here before the break. And I just Porter Goss, this guy who has been appointed. This is another example of the Bush administration's exquisite control of timing and media. If you don't think, I mean, it is now 83 days to regime change. If you don't think Karl Rove has every single one of those 83 days laid out, you are naive. He has a plan for every single day between now and the election. And yesterday, Nancy Pelosi was holding a press conference to announce that she had called back Congress to deal with the Homeland Security issue. And so as soon as she announced that, which was day before yesterday, Bush calls up Porter Goss, gets him over there and says, okay, we're going to do this announcement now. You know that they had been sitting on this thing. They've been waiting for a day in the news cycle where they could just grab the high ground or grab the loudness and just grab a couple days of the news cycle. And they did. And so it's going to be, you know, the topic of discussion for a couple days. And Nancy Pelosi's story gets completely buried. You know, what's going on in Congress with the 9/11 Commission, which is fine with Bush because he's not going to go along with the 9/11 Commission's findings anyway. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A strike of more than 300 Teamsters in Billings has idled buses, stopped trash collection, and closed the city's library for the third business day in a row. Union members walked off the job on Saturday after rejecting the city's final contract offer. Seniority and longevity pay are among the key disagreements between the union and the city. The mayor has indicated he will begin to use supervisors and hire temporary workers rather than return to the negotiating table.
Sci-fi has become reality for some judicial workers in Mexico. The government has begun implanting microchips under the skin of more than 160 employees in the country's attorney general headquarters. The chips are intended to grant certain employees access to secure areas. The chips will also help officials keep track of who has access to sensitive information. Their plan is to start tagging key members of the military, the police, and the office of President Fox. The process is nothing new to Mexicans, as more than 1,000 citizens have received implants that store their medical data. Currently, there are plans to incorporate tracking capabilities into some chips, so in the case of a kidnapping, a crime that is rampant in parts of Mexico, it will be easier to locate the victim.
Community and labor groups held a rally in Buffalo on Monday, urging the state's legislature to override New York Governor Pataki's veto of a minimum wage boost. Pataki justified denying New Yorkers a $2 wage increase over 2 years, saying the legislation would hurt small business owners. But New York's Working Families Party disagrees, saying that most small businesses already pay their workers more than the $5.15 minimum. It's been 7 years since the last raise in the federal minimum wage, and during that time, congressional lawmakers gave themselves 6 raises, adding up to more than $23,000 a year.
The Korean Labor Ministry has charged Burger King and McDonald's for violating that country's labor laws. According to the ministry, the two companies didn't pay miners proper wages and made them work illegal hours. A national survey released in May said that more than 200,000 teenage workers were exploited by the international franchises. It also said that 20.5% of the teen employees worked more than 7 hours a day, a violation of South Korea's Labor Standard Act.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Fewer than 32,000 new jobs were created in July, the least amount for any month this year, according to the latest numbers from the Department of Labor. The DOL had to do some backpedaling for May and June because job gains were actually 61,000 less than originally stated. If George Bush doesn't create a couple million new jobs by November, he'll be the first president in 72 years to have presided over a net job loss.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Okay, let's try this thing out here. I have in my hands a red, white, and blue bumper sticker. And the blue stripe across the top, it has the word Bush with the international no symbol, you know, the round circle, the round red circle with a diagonal slash through it, over the word Bush, and an American flag. The bottom stripe, red stripe, is solid. In the middle, in this, the largest area of the bumper sticker, in white, on a white background and blue type, it says, "It takes a village idiot." And we will be giving away this bumper sticker to the first person who correctly can tell us who is the candidate and what is the year for this political television commercial, somebody running for the United States of America in my lifetime anyway. Here we go.
I'd rather have a man with a hole in his shoe than a hole in everything he says. I'd rather have a man who knows what to do when he gets to be the prez. I love the governor of Illinois.
There's a clue.
He is the gov that brings the dove of peace and joy.
A campaign for peace.
When Illinois, the GOP double cross.
Must be a Democrat.
He is the one who told all the crooks get lost.
And then we beeped his name.
We love you madly. And what you did for your own great state, you're gonna do for the rest of the 48. Didn't know much about him before he came. But now my heart's a ballot that bears his name. Cause I listen to what he had to say. I know that on election day, we're gonna choose the gov that we love. He is the gov nobody can shove. We'll make the gov the president of the U, the me and the USA.
Okay, 1-866-889-8894. Who do you think that was? Let's just see here. Telephone line. And hello, your name and city and who you think that was.
Hi, Tom. It's Kevin in Tampa.
And who do you think that was, Kevin?
Adlai Stevenson.
Adlai Stevenson. You're right. That's incredible. You're right. Okay, everybody else, stop. Hang on just a second, Kevin. I'm going to dump these lines and come back to Kevin. Okay, first call the way. And all these, and everybody's, stop calling. The lines are lit up here. Okay, Kevin, I'm going to, and that was the 19, what year was the campaign?
That was probably 52.
Yep, absolutely. I should have asked you that before, too. 1952, Adlai Stevenson running against Eisenhower, and with that brilliant campaign commercial, Stevenson actually got 44% of the vote, 27,314,000 votes, to Eisenhower's 55.1%, 33 million. Which is a pretty substantial loss that Stevenson had, but in the electoral votes, it was even bigger. He only carried 9 states, all in the South. Interestingly enough, the Democrat carried basically all the Southern states except east of Texas, all of the Southern states except for Florida and Tennessee. He carried Kentucky and West Virginia as well, and then everything from North Carolina down and all the way over to Louisiana. Fascinating thing. Okay, Kevin, I'm going to put you on hold, and Ira will get your address, and we will get this bumper sticker, "It Takes a Village Idiot," off to you. Hang on.
Okay.
That's amazing. The very first caller. And no, I didn't. I don't think I gave out many clues. Okay, Porter Goss. Porter, now, consider this. The Herald Tribune, the International Herald Tribune, October 3rd. Goss mocks suggestion to investigate the outing of Valerie Plame. Representative Porter Goss said Thursday that the uproar over allegations the White House officials purposely identified a covert CIA agent doesn't yet merit an investigation by the House Select Committee on Intelligence, which he chairs. And somebody in the White House commits treason, outing a CIA officer, bringing down an entire international counterterrorism operation. And Porter Goss says, and I quote, Somebody bring me a blue dress and some DNA, and then I'll have an investigation. This is honest to God, this is what he said October 3rd of last year when he said that the investigation of who outed a CIA agent does not merit an investigation. He wrote an op-ed piece on March 10th of this year titled, Need Intelligence? Don't Ask John Kerry. It was published in the Tampa Tribune. He's rebutting on the Bush-Cheney website. Here's Porter Goss, quote, John Kerry's speech today amounted to little more than political me-too-ism. He laid out some old goals that everyone agrees to without offering concrete proposals to achieve them. He also neglected the president's historic achievements in this area. As chairman, Porter Goss decided, you know, we really don't need to investigate what happened at Abu Ghraib. Maybe it's going to harm the United States. Maybe it's a... As this is from Congressional Quarterly, it was 2 months ago. As chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Goss led a party-line vote to reject an amendment that would have increased oversight and investigated alleged prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib. When Congress wanted to investigate Ahmed Chalabi, well, you know, he lied to us. We paid him $300,000 a month for years. How'd you like that paycheck? $300,000 a month! And he lies to us. And because, you know, he wants to be the head of Iraq. I mean, hey, it's going to be one of the richest countries in the world once they get their oil together and once they get their politics stable. Give them a little time. Yeah, but no, doesn't want to do that. Doesn't want to. As chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, this is in Congressional Quarterly, June of this month, this year, 2 months ago. As chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Goss led a party-line vote to reject an amendment that would have authorized an investigation into quote U.S. dealings with Iraqi exile leader Ahmed Chalabi. End quote. Even after allegations that Chalabi has leaked U.S. military secrets to Iran, Goss said, I would say that the oversight has worked well in matters regarding Mr. Chalabi. See, this is the complaint people are going to have about Goss. Is not that, yes, he's an old CIA agent, he understands the CIA, which, you know, I think, frankly, has some upside to it, probably some downside, too, if we're going to do what the 9/11 Commission said, and that is put somebody in charge of all the intelligence agencies. Keep in mind, the CIA only has about 20% of the intelligence budget. The rest of it is in the hands of Donald Rumsfeld, who is really the intelligence director for the United States. He has 80% of the budget, 80% of the firing and hiring power. You think he's not in charge of the intelligence? And so here comes Porter Goss. Multiple attacks on John Kerry. June 23rd. There's no doubt where the record is. The Democratic Party did not support the intelligence community. Yeah, I don't, other than Bill Casey, and I was cracking up last night. Some guy, well, Bill Casey was partisan, and he served with distinction. Bill Casey sold weapons to Iran and was smuggling drugs in from Nicaragua as he was arming a rebel group that was trying to overthrow a democratically elected government. And he nearly went to prison for it. Yeah, that's what happens when you put partisans in that position. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number is Shannon in Oklahoma's on the line. Hey, Shannon, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good, real good, actually. My little girl was born yesterday, so I'm in a
really
good mood.
Congratulations, Shannon. I remember when every one of my three were born, and I fell apart with the first one. I just absolutely. But anyway, that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
What's up?
Okay. Well, you know, I have been wondering about, you know, who he was going to pick, who Bush was going to pick for this head of the intelligence. And I knew, I mean, with Bush's history, I mean, what he's had a history of doing dramatically is dividing the country against itself with decisions like this, picking one party, one guy for the, you know, these nominations that he has. That's going to get one half of the country against the other half of the country. It's just, oh, it's pathetic. But that's what I don't understand, why everybody's been so uppity about these, the 9/11 Commission's findings. He's going to be appointing, it's going to be a presidentially appointed spot for the, well, the new intelligence czar, they call it, or?
Well, you got a problem here, and then that is that on the one hand, the 9/11 Commission is saying we need to create a cabinet-level post who has hiring and firing authority and who has control of 100% of the intelligence budget, and make that person, and make all the intelligence agencies, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the various branches of the military intelligence agencies, the National Security Agency, the CIA, the various agencies that we don't even know the names and initials of, make all of them report to this guy or woman, and have this person in the cabinet and report to the president on a daily basis, rather than the director of CIA, who only controls one-fifth of the intelligence budget, reporting to the president every day. I mean, you can still have a head of the CIA, but that he won't be the head of the intelligence community.
Right.
And so Bush goes on TV and he says, I agree with the 9/11 Commission, because it's very popular, right? I mean, the 9/11 fan, I agree with the 9/11 Commission, we're going to adopt that. But we're not going to name somebody to be a director of national intelligence who will have budget authority or who will have hiring and firing authority, that's not going to be a cabinet office, and they're not going to report to the president. So it's a huge flip-flop on Bush's part. On the one hand, he's saying, yes, we're going to do what they say. And then on the other hand, he's saying, but no, we're not going to do what they say.
Yeah. So you can flip-flop because the Republican sound machine, or echo chamber, as people like to call it, doesn't work against him. It just works against anybody that disagrees with him.
Oh, yeah. It's the Bush flip-flops are legion. I mean, the list is so long, it's scary.
Right. And, that's why I really appreciate what you're doing out there, because it's like the founders of this country said, the only defense that we have for this democracy is an aware populace, that the people know what's going on with their government and never, ever trust them, always question them.
Amen.
That makes you the patriot, sir.
Well, thank you. And you too, Shannon, and I appreciate the call. And it's exactly what Thomas Jefferson said, our quote for the day. Whenever the people are well-informed, they can be trusted with their own government. We have to inform them. Bush says he's the education president. Then he refuses to fully fund key education programs and rarely does his homework, such as read position papers. Bush says that being governor of Texas for 6 years was enough political experience. But then he says being senator for 6 years isn't enough experience. During the 2000 campaign, he says, too many lawsuits being filed. What's the first thing that happens when the election starts going weird? He files a lawsuit. He says that he would, in 2000 campaign, he would not have a litmus test for judges he appointed to be against abortion. Then immediately, as soon as he becomes president, there's a litmus test. Are you for or against abortion? He says, Bush says, help is on the way to the military. Then he cuts benefits and health care to them. During the campaign, he says, I'm going to provide money for first responders, police, fire, and emergency. Then he doesn't. He actually cuts it. Bush says he's in favor of states' rights to decide on gay marriage. Shouldn't be in the Constitution. Then he decides it should be a constitutional amendment. And on it goes. I mean, this. Anyhow, let's move along here. Chuck in New Mexico is on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Chuck, what's on your mind?
Well, it's interesting, this whole new intelligence czar thing, because they already tried it once, 1947. The whole reason they called it the Central Intelligence Agency was they were trying to get away from what happened in World War II with the OSS and versus some of the defense intelligence groups. So I think it was, who the heck was it, John Foster Dulles was the first one?
I believe so.
And it was a total failure. And, he was originally a cabinet member. And so the whole thing has been tried before. It's been tried before something, 55 years ago, 56 years ago.
Yeah, it failed because the Pentagon wouldn't give up what it had.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the bottom line. And that's what Rumsfeld's saying now. So the same thing's going to happen. Chuck, good point, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what are your thoughts?
Well, I was thank you for bringing up that comment that Mr. Goss had made. I had forgotten that he had made that dismissive comment about the Valerie Plame leak, but
yeah, give me a dress with a blue dress with DNA on it, and I'll investigate that.
Well, that's probably how the Republicans feel. That's more important. But what I wanted to ask you, because you're obviously working in the media to some extent, what should be done with people like this? For instance, Robert Novak, who, even though he's a conservative, I had quite a bit of respect for him prior to this. My thinking is, and I'll let you respond to it, is that you can protect reporters' sources. But in a case like this, which obviously endangers national security, I think that protection should be taken away from someone like Novak. What say you?
Yeah. I frankly agree with the ACLU on this and others who are defending the right of the press to keep their sources secret. I think for our society to work, for a free society to work, there have to be some exemptions to what you might call the absolute power of government to enforce the rules. I believe that, for example, the confessional in the church should be absolute and sacrosanct. I think if somebody confesses something to a priest, that priest should not be forced. There should be no legal method to force that priest to give that information up. I believe that a psychiatrist's office should be sacrosanct. And I believe that reporters should not be subject to grand jury subpoenas. So I'm frankly on the side, oddly enough, of the administration on this one, and of Time Magazine, which is paying a $1,000 a day fine. And Tim Russert went in and testified. He went along with it, which I thought was either a cave-in or Tim Russert didn't feel like he really had to protect his source. But frankly, the bottom line is very simple. I mean, if a felony was committed in the White House, and it's quite obvious it was, why are we the people, the American people, not holding the President of the United States accountable?
Yeah, but Novak has to be complicit in this.
Oh, sure, and he's been complicit in many before. And frankly, the crime that Novak committed that I think he could be prosecuted for, which Joe Wilson came on this program a month or two ago and talked about, was Novak actually just, you know, was literally grabbing people on the street and saying, hey, did you know that Valerie Plame, Joe Wilson's wife, works for the CIA?
Right.
I mean, he literally, a friend of Wilson's, Novak, grabbed him on the street and said this to him. I mean, that is not reporting. That is committing a crime. That's violating intelligence information. And for that, Bob Novak should be prosecuted, not for what he wrote in the Chicago Sun-Times, in my opinion. Thanks for the call, Rick. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio.
Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term, but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I'll fly away, oh glory. I'll fly away.
Yes, indeed. I'm going to be flying away a week and a half or something. We're going to take a shot at broadcasting this show live from the Republican National Convention. I figured, you know, the Democratic Convention would be boring, frankly. It was a great show. It was nice to watch it on C-SPAN. And you know, probably would have been great to be there. But frankly, I think it'll be a lot more fun to get some of these, serious wackos sitting down with it. We'll see how it works out. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Alan in Columbus, Ohio, is on the line. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Yes, I'm just wondering, who is borrowed more from the Social Security surplus, the Democrats or the Republicans?
Both. Bill Clinton's claim to have generated huge surpluses was overstated by about $170, $180 billion every year because he was including the Social Security surplus in that. And George Bush has been actually using the Social Security surplus, spending it. I mean, normally it's invested in Treasury bills, and it's supposed to generate interest, right? He has been spending it in the Medicare surplus as well, and using that to reduce the budget deficit numbers down from the actual 700 more or less billion down to the 400 more or less billion that they're using in the press. So both, all of the above. Nobody is free of blame in that category.
Okay, I appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call, Alan. Yeah, this is another one of the, you know, this is where, in my opinion, the press just is not doing their job. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to look at the math with regard to Social Security and the deficit. I mean, it's right there. The government publishes the figures. George Bush is spending that surplus. George Bush, Bill Clinton, of course, was allowing the surplus to accumulate, but he was counting it as surplus, you know, in the grand surplus. Well, you know, part of that grand surplus was the Social Security surplus, and it's supposed to be there. So, you know, both of them have been disingenuous. It's just that Bush's disingenuousness is actually harming the country. Clinton's was just politically useful. Although you could argue the first couple of years of the Clinton administration, he was spending it too, because we were in deficit spending the first few years of his administration. So they both did the same thing. Another Republican has come out for John Kerry here. This is interesting. Retired General Merrill Tony McPeak. He says Bush vastly underestimated the troops needed for the war, adding the Democratic challenger Senator John Kerry is not likely to make the same mistake. Kerry squared away on security matters, McPeak says. He's the former Army, or the former Air Force Chief of Staff. He says Bush frittered away international goodwill after 9/11 and attacked away in Iraq in a way that was guaranteed to create an insurgency. Amen. This is the Tom Hartman Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A strike of more than 300 Teamsters in Billings has idled buses, stopped trash collection, and closed the city's library for the third business day in a row. Union members walked off the job on Saturday after rejecting the city's final contract offer. Seniority and longevity pay are among the key disagreements between the union and the city. The mayor has indicated he will begin to use supervisors and hire temporary workers rather than return to the negotiating table.
Sci-fi has become reality for some judicial workers in Mexico. The government has begun implanting microchips under the skin of more than 160 employees in the country's attorney general headquarters. The chips are intended to grant certain employees access to secure areas. The chips will also help officials keep track of who has accessed sensitive information. There are plans to start tagging key members of the military, the police, and the office of President Fox. The process is nothing new to Mexicans, as more than 1,000 citizens have received implants that store their medical data. Currently, there are plans to incorporate tracking capabilities into some chips, so in the case of a kidnapping, a crime that is rampant in parts of Mexico, it will be easier to locate the victim.
Community and labor groups held a rally in Buffalo on Monday, urging the state's legislature to override New York Governor Pataki's veto of a minimum wage boost. Pataki justified denying New Yorkers a $2 wage increase over 2 years, saying the legislation would hurt small business owners. But New York's Working Families Party disagrees, saying that most small businesses already pay their workers more than the $5.15 minimum. It's been 7 years since the last raise in the federal minimum wage, and during that time, congressional lawmakers gave themselves 6 raises, adding up to more than $23,000 a year.
The Korean Labor Ministry has charged Burger King and McDonald's for violating that country's labor laws. According to the ministry, the two companies didn't pay miners proper wages and made them work illegal hours. A national survey released in May said that more than 200,000 teenage workers were exploited by the international franchises. It also said that 20.5% of the teen employees worked more than 7 hours a day, a violation of South Korea's Labor Standard Act.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Fewer than 32,000 new jobs were created in July, the least amount for any month this year, according to the latest numbers from the Department of Labor. The DOL had to do some backpedaling for May and June because job gains were actually 61,000 less than originally stated. If George Bush doesn't create a couple million new jobs by November, he'll be the first president in 72 years to have presided over a net job loss.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again.
Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Getting fired is one of the sourest experiences you can have. Unless, of course, you're the head honcho of a major corporation. Far from sour, getting booted from the top suite can be a mighty sweet experience. Take the recent case of Sir Philip B. Watts, the former chairman of Shell Oil, which is based in London. He became known to many as Philip the Finagler after it was discovered in an internal investigation that, on his watch, Shell had been cooking its books Enron style, claiming to own way more oil reserves than it actually has. Thanks to this illegal accounting, the company now faces several investigations, major fines, and class action lawsuits. I say, old boy, a bit of a sticky wicket, that. So sticky that last March, Shell's board asked Sir Philip to depart, leave, go away, skittle-scattle. But now, it's been revealed that the board generously eased the egress of Chairman Watts by handing him a sweet severance package of $1.9 million. Imagine what he would have gotten had he simply been Phil Watts and was a worker bee down in Shell's accounting hierarchy. But why have a title if it doesn't bring you special treatment? So instead of being cuffed and hauled out of the building by the bobbies, Sir Philip got a golden parachute to soften his landing. His severance package was the least of it. In addition, he'll also have a $1 million annual pension to comfort him, a stock award worth another $1 million, and a $1.5 million salary payment. Talk about enjoying your golden years. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you own some Shell stock, you might share the outrage of other shareholders at this cavalier giveaway of your corporate funds. Pensions Investment Research Consultants is a London firm that represents institutional shareholders, and it's demanding new rules to give shareholders the power to approve or reject such golden parachutes. Connect with them at pirc.uk.co. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes after the hour. George Bush says national sales tax worth considering. Nowhere in this article are the words progressive or regressive. It's like if a word has more than two syllables, it doesn't get used in the national press, it seems. Anyhow, President Bush said on Tuesday that abolishing the U.S. income tax system and replacing it with a national sales tax was an idea worth considering. Do you get this, what this is about? Yes, let's make sure that everybody who buys anything has to always pay a tax on everything they buy, and that's their major tax. It could end up to be, and some are estimating, as much as a 35% tax. You say, whoa, that's a lot. Well, actually, if you were to do national value-added tax like Denny Hastert is talking about, and replace the income tax with it, it would be in that neighborhood.
It would be invisible. It would happen at every level of production. You mine iron ore out of the ground, and then you sell it to a smelter. The smelter turns it into iron. Well, they increase the value of it, so they pay a tax on it. Then the smelter sells the iron to a steel mill, and they turn it into steel. They increase the value of it. They pay a value-added tax on it. The steel mill then sells sheets of it to the auto manufacturer. They turn it into the body of a car. They pay a value-added tax on it. They've increased the value of it. By the time you pay for it, you don't see all those taxes, but they're added in all along the way. What this is a way of shifting the tax burden from those people who take their income and save it or invest it, which is roughly 2 or 3, maybe 4% of the American public, the top, certainly the top quintile, the top fifth, but by and large, actually, the top 3, 4, 5%, shifting the tax burden from them to those people who spend all of their income simply to survive. This is why these kind of taxes are called regressive, because they beat up the people at the bottom. We've already had a huge step in this direction last year when George W. got past his elimination or reduction. Now he wants to eliminate them next year. His reduction on the income tax on dividend income. If you make your living as a stockholder, if you sit around and wait for the dividend checks to show up, and that's how you make your living, you own millions of shares of stock. I saw in the paper yesterday or the day before, must have been yesterday's newspaper, that Bill Gates sold something like $300 million worth of Microsoft stock. Maybe it was $34 million. It was some amazing amount of Microsoft stock. It was listed in the Insider Trades in the Wall Street Journal. They list this every day. Well, how much income tax did he pay on that? Or a better one, actually, that's a capital gains. A better one would be, you know, Microsoft declares a dividend, and Gates gets a check worth $1 billion or whatever. How much income tax does he pay on that? How much income tax do you think he should pay on that? Well, the reality is that if you work as a fireman or a cop or a talk show host, if you're drawing a salary, I'm not, but if you do, and you've got a different kind of deal here, but or any kind of job you've got, then you are paying payroll tax, which is the Social Security tax and Medicare. You're paying a payroll tax on the first $89,000 more or less dollars that you earn. And the majority of Americans earn $89,000 or less. Less than $89,000. And you're paying up to 32-33%, the top marginal tax rate now, in income taxes, depending on what your income is. But if your income comes from sitting around waiting for the dividend checks, you pay no payroll tax. And you only pay 15% maximum income tax. So that was step one. Now, let's just do away with that nasty income tax altogether. This is why Limbaugh can have the income tax on his homepage. And these cons always talk about the income tax. The income tax is only a small piece of the total tax. For somebody earning $30,000, $40,000 a year, their income taxes represent generally somewhere in the neighborhood of a fifth to a quarter of the total taxes that they're paying. They're paying property taxes, they're paying payroll taxes, they're paying sales taxes, they're paying taxes on their phone bill, they're paying, you know, FCC access taxes, they're paying taxes on their cable bill, they're paying access. And on and on and on it goes. And this is what Bush wants more of. We need to have, you know, George Bush wants to increase your taxes if you're earning less than $89,000 a year. Now, those people who are earning above that, or really above a couple hundred thousand, those people who are making a million or more, they won't have to pay taxes if they don't buy anything with that money. Now, of course, they're going to buy some things. And the trickle-down theory is, well, they're going to buy a new yacht, and that yacht is going to, you know, going to cause a yacht maker to... Well, yeah, okay. The rich do have some impact on the economy, but it's really small impact when you look at it. I mean, how many people do you know who are employed manufacturing things for the rich? Think about it. The middle class in the United States and the working poor, which is increasingly it's the largest and the fastest growing segment of our population, account for the vast majority of consumption in the United States. So let's tax them. As Reuters notes, a flat income tax or a national sales tax, such a system would not be in the best interest of the poor and the middle class, who would pay the same tax rate as the wealthy, even though they have less disposable income. That's very simple. Very simple. So the economy, you're going to hear today, you are going to hear today on the right-wing talk shows, you're going to hear the talking point of the day presented in today's Wall Street Journal on the opinion page, an article by Brian Westbury, the true rock stars of the economy. And you're going to hear this thing about the household survey. The Bureau of Labor Statistics household survey. So the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts together two ways to count employment and unemployment. The household survey actually counts employment. And the other survey which is done, which is called the establishment survey, counts unemployment. The establishment survey questions well over 150,000 employers. I believe it's 160,000 employers every month. It says, how many people have you hired? How many people have you fired? How many people are working for you? That's the survey that concluded that there were 32,000 jobs created in July. Now, the household survey, which the cons are going to be quoting on all their in all their talking points, and in fact, I predict even George W. will be quoting this thing now that it's made its way into the Wall Street Journal, and some patina of credibility has been put on it by this op-ed piece. Not news, no, it's an opinion. The household survey is a telephone sample of households, typically about 60,000. And the household survey, typically, the results of the household survey and the establishment survey, which questions employers, are the same. When the economy goes down, when the economy goes up, they're typically the same. But the last couple of years, in this administration, they have spread apart. And right now, the household survey is showing that 629,000 jobs were created in July, whereas the establishment survey is showing only 32,000 were. Now, the establishment survey is the one that the government officially uses. And the reason for this is because the household survey has a few problems. They use it as a tool to get a bigger snapshot, a broader snapshot of what's going on with the overall economy. And in fact, some of the whole household survey statistics are even used in calculating the establishment survey. But there are a few problems with the household survey. The main ones being, since they're surveying households, they're really trying to get a sense of, are people available for unemployment compensation? Are they available for work? Not, are they working? Now, it's a very important distinction. For example, they will ask you, if you're one of the people that they survey, is there a member of your family who is working without pay in your family? For example, if you own a small business, do you have, you know, a 20-year-old son who or daughter who's, you know, helping out without pay? If you say yes, then that person is counted as employed. People who work for no money at all are counted as employed. They will ask, have you been laid off, but it's called unpaid leave? In other words, there's a chance you may get your job back, but right now you're not working and you're not being paid. If you answer yes, you're counted as employed in the household survey. In the establishment survey, you're counted as unemployed. Which is it? You're not working, you're not getting a paycheck. I would think that you would be called unemployed for purposes of determining the impact of policies on the economy. Right. In other words, is there money flowing through our economy? Is, you know, do we have a healthy economy or not? But the number of people who are, quote, on unpaid leave, the number of people who are working in a family business, and the number of people who are working in a private household. You take a job, for example, mowing people's lawns. According to the household survey, you're employed. According to the establishment survey, you're not. You don't really have a job. You're just, you know, mowing lawns in the neighborhood to make a little extra money. And there are a lot of teenagers doing this. And this is, so what we're seeing here is that this household survey that shows the 600,000 jobs were created in July, that the cons are going to be trumpeting, is actually demonstrating the fragility of the economy right now. Because what it's showing is that in terms of real jobs, the establishment survey clearly shows 32,000 jobs were created. In terms of desperate things that people will do to get a little extra money, or people who are, you know, laid off, who are on leave without pay, that those numbers are going through the roof. Now, call me crazy, but I don't think that's good news. But you will hear a different story, I guarantee you, from the talking heads on right-wing radio and television. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
20% of Iraq veterans who are in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It was in the early morning hours when I fell into a phone call.
See, right from the very beginning, the whole idea of an income tax was for it to be a progressive tax. The greater the blessings that you get from this society, the more you can chip in to maintain it, to hold the apparatus together, the structure. It's only reasonable. In 1918, for example, one of the folks in our chat room, R.L. Smith-Nicol, the screen name, right, shared these stats with me, compiled from the IRS tax website and the inflation calculator. In 1918, there was a car called the Chevrolet 490, which cost $490, FOB Detroit, Michigan. Using an inflation calculator, this equates to $8,912.69, still the cost of a cheap car. A single man, this is 1918, a single man didn't pay income tax until he'd made $3,000 and then paid 1%. Again, using the inflation calculator, this becomes $54,567. So a single person now, back then, if you were single, using today's dollars, you didn't pay income taxes until you made $54,000, and then above that, you paid 1%, going all the way up to 7%. If you made over $500,000, you paid 7%. Again, using the inflation indicator, that would be in today's dollars, $6,800,000. And you'd pay about $500,000 in income tax on that. It's $481,000. So, you know, it was a progressive tax right from the very beginning. Today, if you have a $35,000 income, single wage earner, no kids, not married, renting an apartment, so there's no property taxes in here, $35,000, your federal income tax is $3,700, Social Security tax is $2,100, your state income tax here in the state of Vermont would be $981, sales tax $882, Medicare $508, gasoline $300, phone $182, cable $64, utilities $36, a total of $8,800 in taxes that a $35,000 a year earner would pay. Only $3,000 of that is income tax. So what George Bush wants to do is he wants to crank up all those other taxes so that the sales tax, instead of paying $800 in sales tax, you pay $3,000. Well, then you'd have to pay well over almost $5,000 in income in sales tax. But no income tax. So that somebody who doesn't have to use all of their income to buy food and groceries and clothes and, you know, books for their kids for school will pay less income tax. Very simple. Shouldn't surprise anybody that Bush would be proposing this. You know, a guy who was born on third base and thought he hit a triple. Or born with a silver foot in his mouth, as Ann Richards would say. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Florida, in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
I'd like to comment quickly about two ads that I think, two angles of advertisement that Kerry should be running now to hit these filthy pigs where they can really be hit and where they're susceptible to being hit.
Then those are.
And, that, and the one of them would be they ought to really go after Bush and his encouraging guest workers. And Kerry ought to wear a shirt and say that he wants to be the guest worker for the next presidency, and he'll do it for the first year for a dollar.
That's a great idea. That's actually
that's
a great
one.
Idea.
And they ought to hit Bush, because Bush, well, I want to get into that tax thing, too. I know what these pigs got planned, and I want to tell you, here's what they got planned. Now, the other one would be not just moving the factories out and everything like that, but the sales tax. These idiots that tend to fall for it don't understand something. And that is, with an income tax, it's progressive, and you only pay it if you have income. But when the Bush crime family, with their free trade and guest workers, erodes the masses of wages of people like they've been doing to the middle class and driving them down into poverty and below middle class status, they've been sinking. The majority of the people economically are sinking. Yeah. The deal is with his value-added tax is you'll never cheat, you'll never get around it. It'll right. be fixed in everything you buy, and when your income goes down, it'll be disproportionately that much more egregious for you economically, and they know that. They
yeah.
want to use all these people and squeeze them down economically.
Absolutely, Armin. I absolutely agree with you. And the other thing is that they don't consider as income a lot of income. You set up, you know, Halliburton's deal in the Cayman Islands, offshore dividends, that's not income. Well, it's only 15%. It's going to be zero if they have their way. Thanks for the call, Armin. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A strike of more than 300 Teamsters in Billings has idled buses, stopped trash collection, and closed the city's library for the third business day in a row. Union members walked off the job on Saturday after rejecting the city's final contract offer. Seniority and longevity pay are among the key disagreements between the union and the city. The mayor has indicated he will begin to use supervisors and hire temporary workers rather than return to the negotiating table.
Sci-fi has become reality for some judicial workers in Mexico. The government has begun implanting microchips under the skin of more than 160 employees in the country's attorney general headquarters. The chips are intended to grant certain employees access to secure areas. The chips will also help officials keep track of who has access to sensitive information. Their plan is to start tagging key members of the military, the police, and the office of President Fox. The process is nothing new to Mexicans, as more than 1,000 citizens have received implants that store their medical data. Currently, there are plans to incorporate tracking capabilities into some chips, so in the case of a kidnapping, a crime that is rampant in parts of Mexico, it will be easier to locate the victim.
Community and labor groups held a rally in Buffalo on Monday, urging the state's legislature to override New York Governor Pataki's veto of a minimum wage boost. Pataki justified denying New Yorkers a $2 wage increase over 2 years, saying the legislation would hurt small business owners. But New York's Working Families Party disagrees, saying that most small businesses already pay their workers more than the $5.15 minimum. It's been 7 years since the last raise in the federal minimum wage, and during that time, congressional lawmakers gave themselves 6 raises, adding up to more than $23,000 a year.
The Korean Labor Ministry has charged Burger King and McDonald's for violating that country's labor laws. According to the ministry, the two companies didn't pay miners proper wages and made them work illegal hours. A national survey released in May said that more than 200,000 teenage workers were exploited by the international franchises. It also said that 20.5% of the teen employees worked more than 7 hours a day, a violation of South Korea's Labor Standard Act.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Fewer than 32,000 new jobs were created in July, the least amount for any month this year, according to the latest numbers from the Department of Labor. The DOL had to do some backpedaling for May and June because job gains were actually 61,000 less than originally stated. If George Bush doesn't create a couple million new jobs by November, he'll be the first president in 72 years to have presided over a net job loss.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Dave in Humboldt County on the line. And Dave, good to hear from you again.
Pleasure, Tom. I want to try to help clarify something that is one of the worst deceits that we're getting from our federal government right now. When a person is drawing unemployment, every week or two, they are required to fill out forms, which in effect registers them. It states that they are actively seeking employment, and they sign these. They either bring them in or mail them in. In return, that's how they draw their unemployment.
Right.
So I'm saying that when your unemployment insurance runs out, they no longer count you as unemployed. They say, oh, no, that's not the way it works. It's only those people that are no longer registered, those people who no longer are seeking employment, that we drop as... Well, if you're not drawing your unemployment check, you no longer fill out these forms. You no longer even receive them. So automatically, when you run out of unemployment insurance, you stop filling these forms. That tells them, or they're able to say, now you're employed. You're no longer counted down the rolls of the unemployed because you're no longer filling out these forms.
Don't you think, Dave, most Americans understand that?
Well, I hope I'm making sense, because no, all I'm hearing is that no, it has nothing to do with it. If you run out of unemployment insurance, we still count you as unemployed, you know, as long as you're still filling out the forms. Nobody does.
Yeah, see, when people stop filling out the forms, then they call them discouraged workers, and they don't count them.
They're no longer counted as unemployed. That's
right.
Correct.
Yeah. Good point, Dave. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Warren Buffett, the second richest man in the United States, the investment mogul slash guru. He owns a company called Berkshire Hathaway Inc. If you want to buy just one share in it, it's mind-boggling amounts of money. It's my recollection is it's $10,000 or $15,000 just to buy a share in his if you can get into it. Maybe it's more. It's been a couple of years since I looked at it. Anyhow, this is where the rich invest, the really rich, in Berkshire Hathaway. And here, Dow Jones Newswire, yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway still thinks the grass is greener in foreign currencies and is positioning its portfolio to take advantage of future dollar weaknesses. In the first half of 2004, he increased his holdings in foreign currencies by $8 billion to $19 billion as of the end of June. He said last year that he holds several currencies, but not the dollar. Now, why would one of the smartest investors in the United States not be willing to hold the dollar? Well, as the Wall Street Journal notes, some currency analysts believe both the ballooning federal budget deficit and the deficit in the current account. Now, the current account deficit is the difference between what we buy and what we sell. See, if you buy more from countries overseas than you sell to countries overseas, they still have to be paid, so you have to borrow money from them to pay them. And you create a deficit, a negative situation, a deficit. And so, as the Wall Street Journal points out, some currency analysts believe both the ballooning federal budget deficit and the deficit in the current account, which measures goods and services trade, plus revenue from investments, will drag down the value of the dollar over the long term. To fund, now here's, this is,
This is where the real kicker. To fund the current account deficit. This is our trade deficit, is the phrase, you know, that's generally used. The trade deficit. Just to pay for this, the U.S. must attract more than $1 billion a day in foreign investment. Now, what does that mean? $1 billion a day in foreign investment. It means that $1 billion a day has to come into the United States and buy parts of America that were owned by Americans and that now are owned by Japanese, Chinese, Saudis. You know, Saudi Arabia now owns about 5% of all the assets in the United States. They bailed out Citibank, for example. You've got China being one of the Chinese investors, some of the largest investors in the United States right now, because the money has to come back here somehow. You have to complete the cycle, the circle. If you don't complete the circle. Oh, Victoria Jones on line 3. Hey, Victoria Jones, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Victoria, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's our daily report from Washington, D.C., and I was looking at the flashing light thinking, who's calling on that line? And there it was on my screen. I'm sorry to keep you on hold while I was going in this rant, and I'll finish it up after you're finished. I know you're
on
a tight schedule.
Don't worry at all. I'm listening away.
Okay. So, anyhow, what's going on in Washington, D.C.? I was reading some pieces of Porter Goss, him saying that he did not want to investigate the Valerie Plame outing, but if you brought him a blue dress with some DNA, he would call investigations for that. This was just 2 months ago. Is that kind of thing now coming out? Is that hot?
No, I wouldn't say it is yet. I think that it's going to be, I mean, there'll be a little bit of it, but I think there's going to be... that's going to come about round about the time of the hearings to confirm him. That's when that's going to really come out.
Yeah.
Although, having said that, the Democrats will probably roll over. They don't want to be seen as being political, despite it being a very political appointment, because they're afraid to engage President Bush.
Well, this is the same thing they did with the Department of Homeland Security and the war in Iraq in September of 2002, because there was an election coming.
Well, also specifically with John Ashcroft, and they really didn't want to confirm him, and they complained and moaned and whined and confirmed him anyway, and we're going to see the same thing again.
Yeah.
So at some point, you could forgive the American electorate for saying, well, maybe President Bush is tougher on terror because you roll over.
Yeah. The Democrats really, you know, and all they have to do is look at how Newt Gingrich ran the Republicans. I mean, you know, it's not like there's not a, I mean, I wouldn't use him as a total role model because he was so amoral. You know, but it is possible to run Congress with some spine, even when you're a minority party. Anyhow.
No, there's no question. They could be. Now, Porter Goss, as you know, is the chairman of the Intelligence Committee in the House.
Right.
This morning I was at the House Intelligence Committee hearing, and he wasn't chairing because he stepped down from that position, although he's still on the committee.
Yeah.
The chairman and vice chairman of the 9/11 Commission testified this morning. And gave very similar opening statements to the ones they gave yesterday. Yesterday's was particularly impassioned by Chairman Kaine in terms of how they, you know, how important it is to take on these recommendations and to get it right now. They did both offer their good wishes. I don't know if they said congratulations, but their good wishes and, you know, a difficult or thankless job, words like that. They were very pleasant to him. Very pleasant, very congratulatory. However, neither one in any way, either by language or nuance or tone or anything, indicated whether they thought he should be confirmed or not. So I think that, this is my thought, I think the 9/11 Commission's made a decision to not take a decision on this.
Oh, sure. They're trying to stay out of politics.
Right, absolutely. But that was very clear this morning. They made it clear.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think that that's actually probably a good thing.
I think so. I mean, they can only lose. They need to stay completely focused on their message. That, you know, it's one of those things of talking points. The more they repeat it, the more people are likely to get it.
Yeah.
And they want people to get it.
You know, what's amazing to me, Victoria, is the number, the clear perception in America that George, because he did such a masterful job of lying to the media about this, that George Bush is actually going to implement all of the findings of the 9/11 Commission, when in fact he's actively working to obstruct them.
Well, and of course he's done that all along with the commission, and the commissioners, while again not being political or contentious, are just and not saying, hey, Bush is doing this, we want that, are making it very clear. every time it comes up, and even when it doesn't, that the National Intelligence Director has to have budget authority, has to have hiring and powering, firing power, and has to be independent.
Yeah.
So, but you're right, and I don't know whether the, I don't think the press is doing a good enough job to tell the public. You know, I keep hearing the phrase, the president embraced the commission's findings. He didn't embrace anything.
No, no. He said.
Embrace is so misleading.
He said he embraced them.
Exactly.
But in fact, he also said to his people, we're not going nowhere near this stuff.
And you see, and it would be quite possible for a reporter without being opinionated to report the way that they do in some other places by saying, you know, the president says that he's embracing the findings. Well, any member of the public in any other country, when they hear the press say that, know that, well, the person is reporting that that's what the president says.
Yeah.
I, as a voter, get to decide whether I believe that.
Yeah. Well, don't you think the press should say the president says he's embracing the findings, but he has not taken any action in that direction, or the president says he's embracing the findings, but he has taken action to refute to prevent the office of security director, national security director that they're suggesting should exist from existing.
I think, well, it's difficult because if it's in the world of the soundbite on TV, they have very little time. What I think they could do is to sort of bullet point the three things that the commission says are essential, and they could even get the language from the commission so they could put them in parentheses.
Yeah.
And then, again, put in parentheses what the president says and just compare them. So it's not even the reporter being accused of being biased, but literally by the facts saying this is what it says, this is what it says. And they could do that very easily.
Yeah. So why aren't they?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Good question.
Good question. Do we have a lazy media or do we have a corporate media?
I think we have lazy. I think we have corporate. I think we have frustrated because of lack of time.
Yeah.
And I think we have, to some extent, a media that is genuinely, and this is very sad, when it's dealing with the White House, is afraid of loss of access.
Well, I was just going to say,
we've all been threatened with that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think the biggest problem is the starification, the entertainmentification of the media. I mean, you know, Walter Cronkite, back when he was reporting in the 60s, was making something like $70,000 a year. These people now are literally drawing million-dollar salaries, certainly hundreds of thousands of dollars in the low end, by the time they reach the point where they're like a senior White House correspondent. And if they say something that upsets this administration, unlike previous administrations, has just said, if we don't like how you're reporting, we're not going to talk to you anymore.
That's
right. And if they won't talk to you, you're out of a job.
That's exactly right.
The
and
network,
you've got children to put through school.
Yeah, the network will fire you and find somebody who will suck up to the administration and get the sound bites.
And so you have these really, many of them, very fine journalists with scruples doing their best within it's kind of like working in a very restrictive regime in the old Soviet Union, doing their best within their parameters to tell us what they can.
Yeah.
And to just hope that we go to the internet and look it up for ourselves.
This is a major tragedy, Victoria.
It is.
This is just a major tragedy. So what else is up in Washington?
Not very much. I mean, it's pretty quiet. When I went to the Capitol this morning, there were even more cops at the barricades. Of course, you know, as we heard yesterday, Al-Qaeda's been planning or is planning or whatever it is, an assassination attempt against some kind of major leader, which I think we all kind of thought they were doing. I didn't think that was a surprise. Maybe there's a timing element to this, but I did get the impression that they're very on alert. I mean, you know, they ask to see my ID when I go through security. Now, that may not sound like much to people, but when you have permanent ID and your ID, when they look at your ID, even from a distance, they know what it is. When they actually ask to see it, scrutinize the picture and this kind of thing, that is really stepped up.
Yeah.
They don't normally do that. Yeah. But I was standing in the middle of the Capitol, well, I was walking through from one side to the other side, and there were lots of tourists milling around, and I was looking at them and thinking, are you all tourists? Or are some of you up to no good?
Yeah, is somebody here taking pictures for Osama?
Exactly, and I don't know the answer to that. So I don't object to the increase in security around somewhere like the Capitol. I don't feel you can be too safe there.
You know, Victoria, I remember the late 60s when we had the Symbionese Liberation Army and, you know, these guys running around robbing banks and the weathermen robbing banks and the Detroit burning and Los Angeles in flames. It was a time of tremendous crisis and significant threat to the, you know, of domestic terrorism. Looking back on it, you could certainly have used those words at that time. And yet, the nation didn't seem to be terrorized. What's different?
I hate to use the phrase, you know, because everybody uses it and it's become a cliche. But the truth is that September the 11th changed everything. Now, usually I think that phrase is a cop-out. In this case, I think it's for real, because I think when you see the World Trade Center coming down with planes and you see people falling out of the sky, that's different from the threat of people being killed or people being picked off one by one. That's the kind of shock factor.
Yeah, good answer.
It had the effect that it was supposed to have and that these other groups didn't have. They didn't get it. Fortunately, they didn't think of it 30 years ago.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that that's certainly probably 80 or 90% of it. I think the rest of it, though, is the way that this administration, the way, number one, the media have replayed that tape to the point that we were all imprinted with it. And
right.
number two, the way that this administration has used that to whip up fear. I mean, they could have just as easily have said, yeah, these guys, you know, keep in mind, let's just keep in mind, these were, you know, 15 Saudis with box cutters. And this is a real problem, but it's not like we were attacked by the Soviet Union with nuclear bombs. And let's put this thing in perspective. And you know, I mean, they could have calmed the American people. Instead, they chose to make the American people increasingly more hysterical on an ongoing basis.
I agree.
Anyhow, Victoria, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you very much.
Hear from you, and thanks for the report from Washington,
okay,
D.C. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria. So just to wrap this thing up, Warren Buffett, because we're just about out of time here, too, in this segment, we have to bring $1 billion a day into the United States. But in May, we brought in in April, we brought in $76 billion. In May, we only brought $59 billion. It's $56 billion, excuse me. It's declining. In an interview last year with Fortune magazine, Mr. Buffett said the transfer of our country's net worth abroad would eventually lead to what he called major trouble. Are we facing major trouble? I would suggest we are. Our economy is very fragile as a result of the giving away of America, the offshoring of America, the outsourcing of America, the giving away, the selling off, the auctioning off of America to the highest bidder by the Bush administration and their corporate cronies. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
An ancient civilization that turned to dust holds important lessons for modern society, according to a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Nineveh was a city of gleaming palaces set in the fertile crescent of Mesopotamia, but the capital of the Assyrian Empire crumbled away 4,000 years ago, done in by soil erosion and other environmental problems that destroyed the ancient civilization. Paul Ehrlich sees parallels in our current environmental troubles. Ehrlich and his wife Anne have written a new book called One with Nineveh. He says our society is also heading for disaster, but unlike the Assyrians, we should know better.
The rulers of Mesopotamia, of Nineveh, had a lot of pride, a lot of hubris, but they had the justification that they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know that they were ruining their environmental supports. On the other hand, the rulers of the United States have a scientific community, the best in the world, that has been telling them, along with the rest of the world's scientists, in no uncertain terms, that we are destroying our life support systems, and one of the main ways we're doing it is burning too much coal, oil, and natural gas.
Ehrlich says burning fossil fuels could be our undoing because carbon dioxide and other greenhouse pollutants are causing the Earth to overheat. He says the science behind this assertion is rock solid, but people continue to play politics with the issue. And he says we continue to waste our natural wealth like there's no tomorrow.
We're like the profligate child that inherited a vast fortune from the planet. And every year we're writing a bigger check on that fortune, and the politicians are very proud of it. But the scientists are watching what's happening to the balance in the checking account, and the balance is going down ever more rapidly.
Ehrlich, who also wrote the 1968 bestseller The Population Bomb, sees irony in the fact that Nineveh was located in what is now Iraq. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Who by powder, who for his greed, who for his hunger, and who shall I say is calling?
And welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. The bottom line here, this whole economic rant, is that we have to define what's the purpose of an economy. Why do we have an economy? It doesn't just magically appear. It's something that we intentionally put in place. Do we have it for the benefit of humans and all life? Do we have it to advance the goals of freedom and society? Or do we have it so that a few people can get very rich? Or is it possible that you can do both? And to what extent do you say, okay, the value of a few people getting very rich is starting to harm the value of everything else being safe? At that point, we say, okay, this is where we're putting the limits in. I'm going to share with you very quickly an ad from Adbusters, adbusters.org, their website. Just a marvelous statement of the basic reality about these things. You know, gross national product, gross domestic product, GDP or GNP, is the accumulation of
goods and services in the economy. Here we go.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Yeah, see, the point is very, very clear. I mean, the message is that we have organized a culture and a society in a way that says if someone makes money off it, it's good, and if they don't, it's bad. This has been our only index, and it's time to change that and instead ask, is this healthy for humanity and every other living thing? And can we add to that, is it possible that somebody can get an incentive out of this to do some good thing? And add that to the metrics of it all. You know, in 1775, Thomas Paine read the first page of The Crisis. He said, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will now no doubt shrink from the service of his country, but tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered." We're facing a new tyranny, my friends. It is the tyranny of the corporate-driven religion of consumerism. It's driving people to work themselves to death, creating an army of latchkey children. Over half the children of American Canada come home to an empty home. It's the tyranny of a culture that's consuming the planet and spitting out waste. It's the tyranny of a culture that ignores the fact that 3 billion humans go to sleep every night without enough food or nutrition. It is the tyranny of an insanity that says it's appropriate that women be slaves in more than half the world, or that even slaves exist at all. We can fix this. First, we have to wake up and get active. Get active locally, nationally. All of us now.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A strike of more than 300 Teamsters in Billings has idled buses, stopped trash collection, and closed the city's library for the third business day in a row. Union members walked off the job on Saturday after rejecting the city's final contract offer. Seniority and longevity pay are among the key disagreements between the union and the city. The mayor has indicated he will begin to use supervisors and hire temporary workers rather than return to the negotiating table.
Sci-fi has become reality for some judicial workers in Mexico. The government has begun implanting microchips under the skin of more than 160 employees in the country's attorney general headquarters. The chips are intended to grant certain employees access to secure areas. The chips will also help officials keep track of who has accessed sensitive information. There are plans to start tagging key members of the military, the police, and the office of President Fox. The process is nothing new to Mexicans, as more than 1,000 citizens have received implants that store their medical data. Currently, there are plans to incorporate tracking capabilities into some chips, so in the case of a kidnapping, a crime that is rampant in parts of Mexico, it will be easier to locate the victim.
Community and labor groups held a rally in Buffalo on Monday, urging the state's legislature to override New York Governor Pataki's veto of a minimum wage boost. Pataki justified denying New Yorkers a $2 wage increase over 2 years, saying the legislation would hurt small business owners. But New York's Working Families Party disagrees, saying that most small businesses already pay their workers more than the $5.15 minimum. It's been 7 years since the last raise in the federal minimum wage, and during that time, congressional lawmakers gave themselves 6 raises, adding up to more than $23,000 a year.
The Korean Labor Ministry has charged Burger King and McDonald's for violating that country's labor laws. According to the ministry, the two companies didn't pay miners proper wages and made them work illegal hours. A national survey released in May said that more than 200,000 teenage workers were exploited by the international franchises. It also said that 20.5% of the teen employees worked more than 7 hours a day, a violation of South Korea's Labor Standard Act.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Fewer than 32,000 new jobs were created in July, the least amount for any month this year, according to the latest numbers from the Department of Labor. The DOL had to do some backpedaling for May and June because job gains were actually 61,000 less than originally stated. If George Bush doesn't create a couple million new jobs by November, he'll be the first president in 72 years to have presided over a net job loss.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Getting fired is one of the sourest experiences you can have. Unless, of course, you're the head honcho of a major corporation. Far from sour, getting booted from the top suite can be a mighty sweet experience. Take the recent case of Sir Philip B. Watts, the former chairman of Shell Oil, which is based in London. He became known to many as Philip the Finagler after it was discovered in an internal investigation that, on his watch, Shell had been cooking its books Enron style, claiming to own way more oil reserves than it actually has. Thanks to this illegal accounting, the company now faces several investigations, major fines, and class action lawsuits. I say, old boy, a bit of a sticky wicket, that. So sticky that last March, Shell's board asked Sir Philip to depart, leave, go away, skittle-scattle. But now, it's been revealed that the board generously eased the egress of Chairman Watts by handing him a sweet severance package of $1.9 million. Imagine what he would have gotten had he simply been Phil Watts and was a worker bee down in Shell's accounting hierarchy. But why have a title if it doesn't bring you special treatment? So instead of being cuffed and hauled out of the building by the bobbies, Sir Philip got a golden parachute to soften his landing. His severance package was the least of it. In addition, he'll also have a $1 million annual pension to comfort him, a stock award worth $1 million, and a $1.5 million salary payment. Talk about enjoying your golden years. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you own some Shell stock, you might share the outrage of other shareholders at this cavalier giveaway of your corporate funds. Pensions Investment Research Consultants is a London firm that represents institutional shareholders, and it's demanding new rules to give shareholders the power to approve or reject such golden parachutes. Connect with them at pirc.uk.co. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time.
Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. These must be strange days to be a neoconservative. We're also streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. These must be strange days to be a neoconservative, writes Martin Seif in today's salon.com. Fascinating article. Caught between exultant hope and wild terror. Utterly discredited, yet still securely in power. Proven totally wrong on Iraq, yet still determined to believe against all odds that one more wild throw of the dice will recoup all. Could it be? Could it be that the Wolfowitz, Feith, Pearl, Cheney, Jeb Bush axis, those guys who signed the Project for New American Century's letter to Bill Clinton in 1998 demanding that he attack Iraq immediately, Scooter Libby, John Hanna, that these guys are now planning another war, and that this war is going to be the big event of this election cycle? Could be. Could be. Now you have the British press speculating about this. And you know, in the midst of this, we have virtually nobody on the right saying, oops, about Iraq. And we don't have the media holding them to account. Instead, we've got folks like Charles Krauthammer, who was the great cheerleader, you'll recall, for the Iraq invasion, the columnist for Time magazine and the Washington Post, who whipped up the Iraq invasion in the press. He's not only not saying, you know, I'm really sorry about those 10, 20, 30,000 dead Iraqis. Yeah, I know it's more than the number of Americans that died on 9/11. No, I'm really sorry, but no, he's not saying that. He's not saying, you know, I'm really sorry about that over 900, you know, pushing 1,000 dead American soldiers, the somewhere between 6 and 30,000 injured, certainly 6,000 badly wounded American soldiers, blind, brain damaged, disfigured, missing an arm or a leg. Really sorry about that. We thought we had it right, but we were wrong. We really thought there were weapons. We really thought that the people would welcome. We really believed that even though Ahmed Chalabi had been sentenced to 22 years in hard labor and by the country of Jordan for bank fraud, that he was telling us the truth. We really believed that the Iraqi army was going to collapse as soon as we showed up. We had no idea it was going to take a couple of weeks and that they would still be shooting at us a year later, people who were members of that army. We don't hear them saying, you know, I'm sorry, we really believed that there would be no anti-American guerrilla operations. This, by the way, I'm sharing this with you from this list, this marvelous Salon.com article, today's Salon.com. Today, Iraq, tomorrow, Iran, by Martin Seif, S-E-I-F-F. Maybe it's Seif.
Charles Krauthammer and others, Jeb Bush, Scooter Libby, John Hanna, Douglas Feith, Richard Perles, Wolfowitz, Cheney, Rumsfeld. We don't hear them saying, you know, we're really sorry about all those dead people. We really thought that Saddam and Al-Qaeda were working together. We really thought there were weapons of mass destruction. I'm sorry, we were wrong. We really believed that if we occupied Iraq, that the result would be that Al-Qaeda would be weakened and discredited. We really thought that. We really thought, you know, if we occupied Iraq, and everybody would say, oh, those Americans, they're such wonderful people. Those nasty Al-Qaeda folks. We really thought that. I mean, after all, it's what they told us. They said, this is the truth, folks. They have not said, you know, I'm really sorry about those dead young American men and women. We really thought that there would be quickly, after Saddam fell, a stable democracy in Iraq. We were wrong. We don't hear them saying, you know, I'm sorry, it didn't even occur to us that the Shia and the Sunni might actually work together against us. I mean, they never have in the past, really. They've always been enemies. Of course, ignoring the hundreds of years of the Crusades. And even, for that matter, even the Ottoman Empire. They haven't said to us, you know, we're really sorry about all the taxpayer dollars that are being spent, that we can't build schools in the United States, we can't build highways, we can't have a health care system for everybody, because we've got to have a health care system for everybody in Iraq. We have to provide Social Security for everybody in Iraq. We've got to pay for the Iraqi army. We've got to pay for their police department. We've got to rebuild their roads and their bridges. And I'm really sorry, we thought that their oil revenues would pay for that. We were wrong. And so, taxpayers of America, I know you're having to pay $2,000-$3,000 a year in extra taxes and interest. Or your children and grandchildren will, for what we're doing in Iraq. We really thought we could do it for free. I mean, Doug Feith testified before Congress. $2 billion max. We'll pay for it out of oil revenue. We thought it would be quick. We thought it would be easy. We thought it would be cheap. We're not hearing the neocons in this administration. We're not hearing George Bush say, you know, I'm really sorry. I thought NATO didn't matter. I thought we could safely ignore NATO. We don't need their help. I really thought this thing would be over in a flash. We thought we could ignore the United Nations. I'm really sorry. We were wrong. We really thought we could pull together a significant coalition of the willing, not you know, Moldavia's 32 guys and, you know, no. We really thought we could pull together a real coalition. You know, a real group of allies who would actually support what we were doing, who would help pay for it like they did with the Gulf War, where the United States only had to pay a couple billion dollars. The rest of the world paid some 90% of that. We didn't realize that we'd only get 45 people from Tonga, 180 people from Mongolia, 122 people from Latvia, 55 from Estonia. We didn't realize Georgia would only send 159 people, or that Albania would send us 70, that Macedonia would send us 28, or New Zealand 60. We didn't realize Australia would only send 250 soldiers. We didn't realize the Czech Republic would only send 110, or that Kazakhstan would send us 29, or Moldova would send us 12. We didn't realize that Spain and Canada and the Philippines, Norway, Nicaragua, Honduras, the Dominican Republic would leave. Really sorry that our troops have to represent such a large percentage Now, we thought it was a big deal that the UK was involved. We didn't realize they would only send 7,900 troops. That's right, folks, 7,900 British soldiers. We haven't heard from the Bush administration. You know, I'm really sorry. I didn't realize when we told you, American people, that the occupation of Iraq and the opening of its oil fields, that making of this oil, this abundant oil available to the world, when we told you that that was going to solve the problem. When we told you that was it. I mean, Iraq had that was going to break the cartel. Remember, it was going to break the OPEC cartel. We don't have to worry anymore about whether the Saudis like us or not, or what's happening with Mexican or Venezuelan politics. There'll be so much oil from Iraq. I know we told you that. You know, Dick Cheney saying
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Second only to Saudi Arabia. We thought that we would have that. We thought that that would reduce oil down to $20 a barrel. And we told you that, and we were wrong. I'm sorry. We haven't heard from this administration. You know, I'm really sorry. We thought that establishing That invading Iraq and immediately establishing a stable democracy there would break the back of the Palestinian uprising. We thought it would bring peace to the Middle East. We were wrong. I'm sorry. We haven't heard that. We haven't heard them say, we really thought, the American Enterprise, Lynn Cheney, saying that the occupation and remaking of Iraq would make the other nations in the Middle East more stable. We didn't realize that it would produce an explosion of recruiting for al-Qaeda all across the Middle East. We didn't realize it would destabilize governments in ways that are moving them away from democracy instead of toward it. We're sorry. We haven't heard them apologize when they said, well, Muqtada al-Sadr, he's no big deal. We can ignore him. And we can deal with him. Nothing to worry about. Back 6 months ago. We guessed wrong. We haven't heard them say, when we told you that the old Saddam loyalists and the insurgency, they're not going to get any broad support from the population. We were wrong. We haven't heard Krauthammer apologize for that one, that he was so enthusiastic about. The Iraqi community, they're not going to go along with any kind of insurgency. Yeah, these guys, they'll weed them out. That'll be it. Have you heard an apology? Maybe I missed it. Now, what I heard was George Bush yesterday saying, knowing what I know today, I still would have done it. My friends, the definition of insanity is continuing to do something that doesn't work.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do.
No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Come writers and critics who prophesize with your pen and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again, and don't speak too soon for the wheel's still in spin.
The Iraqi regime is required to destroy its weapons of mass destruction, to cease all development of such weapons, and to stop all support for terrorist groups. The Iraqi regime has violated all of those obligations. It possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons. It is seeking nuclear weapons.
Yeah. Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman Program brought to you by the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, CASCR.org. Benjamin Krim, 1-888-242-8272. Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S. In These Times Magazine and The Progressive. Have you heard from George W. Bush? With an apology. Maybe just an apology for, you know, his last lie of the day, let's say. From 1 year ago this week, George Bush, in his weekly radio address, said, and I quote,
We are recovering hundreds of millions of dollars from the old regime and are using those funds to pay civil servants. Teachers, healthcare workers, police, and others performing essential services are also receiving salaries from our coalition. Life is returning to normal for the Iraqi people. Hospitals and universities have opened, and in many places, water and other utility services are reaching pre-war levels. The reality, unfortunately, is a little different. Recovered Iraqi money hasn't come close to paying for the war in Iraq or the rebuilding of its infrastructure. Instead, funding is coming from the U.S. taxpayers. As Jim Jordan points out in his daily traffic report from America Coming Together, Bush has revealed plans to cut the very programs in the United States that he's touting in Iraq. This is the exact same program. Isn't it wonderful that we're doing this in Iraq? I'm sorry, friends. We can't do this in the United States. Well, there's just not enough tax dollars to go around. We have to have these tax cuts, you see. In the U.S., Bush's budget for next year plans cuts to programs, including Homeland Security. He's going to cut $1 billion out of Homeland Security next year. Can you imagine if a Democrat proposed that? He's cutting education, he's cutting job training, he's cutting infant nutrition. Yet we just appropriated $25 billion in emergency funds for Iraq. Here's the story from Reuters. U.S. President George W. Bush approved another $25 billion in emergency funds for military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan on Thursday. The Bush administration had previously said it would not need more money for Iraq and Afghanistan until the new fiscal year, which begins on October 1st, but officials later acknowledged they might need to draw on the emergency funds allocated by Congress. This, I think we can safely say, is a far cry from using Iraq's money to pay for Iraq's infrastructure. And George Bush has the audacity, the belief, the absolute and utter belief that the American people are stupid enough to swallow a big lie, to say yesterday, number one, to say John Kerry supported the invasion of Iraq, when that's not what John Kerry said. And number two, to say, and he would have, and George Bush saying, and I would have done it again, even knowing what he knows now. Even knowing there's no weapons of mass destruction, Iraq represents no threat to us. There's no biological warfare agents. There's no chemical warfare agents. There's going to be a year and a half long insurrection, and the country might melt down in civil war. Even knowing all that, he says, and it's going to cost the lives of over 900 American servicemen and the bodies of over 6,000, not to mention 30,000 Iraqi civilians, he would still do it. This goes beyond tragedy. This goes all the way to insanity. 29 and a half minutes past the hour.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. A strike of more than 300 Teamsters in Billings has idled buses, stopped trash collection, and closed the city's library for the third business day in a row. Union members walked off the job on Saturday after rejecting the city's final contract offer. Seniority and longevity pay are among the key disagreements between the union and the city. The mayor has indicated he will begin to use supervisors and hire temporary workers rather than return to the negotiating table.
Sci-fi has become reality for some judicial workers in Mexico. The government has begun implanting microchips under the skin of more than 160 employees in the country's attorney general headquarters. The chips are intended to grant certain employees access to secure areas. The chips will also help officials keep track of who has access sensitive information. There are plans to start tagging key members of the military, the police, and the office of President Fox. The process is nothing new to Mexicans, as more than 1,000 citizens have received implants that store their medical data. Currently, there are plans to incorporate tracking capabilities into some chips, so in the case of a kidnapping, a crime that is rampant in parts of Mexico, it will be easier to locate the victim.
Community and labor groups held a rally in Buffalo on Monday, urging the state's legislature to override New York Governor Pataki's veto of a minimum wage boost. Pataki justified denying New Yorkers a $2 wage increase over 2 years, saying the legislation would hurt small business owners. But New York's Working Families Party disagrees, saying that most small businesses already pay their workers more than the $5.15 minimum. It's been 7 years since the last raise in the federal minimum wage, and during that time, congressional lawmakers gave themselves 6 raises, adding up to more than $23,000 a year.
The Korean Labor Ministry has charged Burger King and McDonald's for violating that country's labor laws. According to the ministry, the two companies didn't pay miners proper wages and made them work illegal hours. A national survey released in May said that more than 200,000 teenage workers were exploited by the international franchises. It also said that 20.5% of the teen employees worked more than 7 hours a day, a violation of South Korea's Labor Standard Act.
Here's today's Dow Bob report.
Fewer than 32,000 new jobs were created in July, the least amount for any month this year, according to the latest numbers from the Department of Labor. The DOL had to do some backpedaling for May and June because job gains were actually 61,000 less than originally stated. If George Bush doesn't create a couple million new jobs by November, he'll be the first president in 72 years to have presided over a net job loss.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. I haven't heard an apology from George W. for the promises broken. Let's specifically look at some of his promises broken that go beyond just the neocon. By the way, before I leave the topic of Iraq, these people who told us these 21 lies that I just documented to you that Martin Seif so brilliantly listed in Salon.com today in his article, Today Iraq, Tomorrow Iran. These same people are now starting to say the exact same things about Iran. They've got a lot of oil. They are part of the axis of evil. We can invade them quickly. We can take them down. You know, blah, blah, blah. They are ginning up another war, and they are going to, and mark my words, something is going to happen before the election. This same kind of rhetoric is continuing.
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
Well, does it? Does it?
Does it, Mr. Bush?
Apparently it would have. Because we had inspectors in there, George. We were looking at what he was doing. Hans Blix was coming back and saying to the UN, you know, it doesn't look to me like there's anything there. And you had the previous inspector, Scott Ritter, saying, not only is there nothing there, I destroyed it all. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. Ann in Sarasota, Florida is on the line. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hi. Before you leave the topic of Iraq,
okay.
You were talking about Gulf War I and it will only cost a couple billion because we had all this help to help pay for it. Well, it's kind of like this one and George hiding the money that they spent on this one because there's a lot of it doesn't make it to the budget. It kind of floats out there somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. We're still paying for Gulf War I in the form of, you know, hundreds of thousands of veterans with Gulf War syndrome.
Well, not just that. To get that alliance coalition last time, same way this time, they made all sorts of deals with countries like Turkey and, yeah, and just England and just all sorts of countries all over. About trade deals and foreign aid and all sorts of stuff to get them to go along with it. So we're paying through the back door for Gulf War I and all these deals that they made to get the coalition that they did. And so I think the cost is a lot higher than what's been admitted to, and that's part of the problem with our economy because you're pulling all that money out for all those deals that they did. Got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, you're right, Ann. You're right. Good point.
Okay.
Thank you for making it. 24 minutes before the hour, 23 and a half. 1-866-889-8894. Frank in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Frank.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the Office of Homeland Security actually is a job that the president should be doing? Do you think that this new position of what they decided they weren't going to call a czar, because that was sort of politically incorrect, of intelligence, isn't that a job that the president should be doing?
I mean, and beyond that, I mean, didn't we once create a director of central intelligence?
Isn't that supposed to, what's the president supposed to do if not this stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, he has a lot of responsibilities, but I agree with you. This is buck passing raised to an art form. This is a little bit off topic, but I think it's worth mentioning. One of my big concerns is their use of the word homeland. You started out this thing about homeland security. Do you remember any politician in the history of the United States using the word homeland before 9/11?
When they were talking about Adolf Hitler using it.
No, I'm talking about American politicians.
I agree. I know what you mean. Yeah,
We never used it. And you go back and you read the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich by Schurer, and he talks about how Hitler and Hess got together, and they were trying to figure out how to make people identify with this essentially cult of Nazism. And they had to create, they were super anti-Semitic, and as part of their anti-Semitism, they had very carefully studied what was then the Zionist movement, you know, the creation of Israel, because Israel didn't exist at that time. But there were Jews in Europe who were arguing for it, and I forget the name of the Jewish leader who was a member, big time Zionist in Germany, and Hitler and Hess came to the conclusion, and later, you know, Himmler and all these guys, Goebbels. That they should borrow this word that was being used by the movement, the Zionist movement, the movement to create a state of Israel, of homeland, for the German people, even though the German people were not, you know, all of the exact same religion, all of the same race, whatever you want to call that. Nonetheless, that if they were to use that word that had been used, that it would create a sense of we're us, they're them, screw them, you know, they're an other. And it gives, and they had, and they thought that using this would bring people together. In fact, Rudolf Hess introduced this word into the German lexicon. It's Heimat. And he says, "Heimat zu sein," to call this the homeland. And he introduced this word to the German people in 1934 in Nuremberg, at the Nuremberg Rally, which was recorded by Leni Riefenstahl. Here's a little clip. This is the first introduction of the word homeland in Germany by Rudolf Hess as he's introducing Adolf Hitler.
Dank Ihrer Führung.
Thanks to the Führer.
Wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen.
Now Deutschland.
Heimat zu sein.
Yeah, here we go. That's it. Okay.
Heimat zu sein. Für alle Deutschen der Welt.
Yeah. The homeland for all the Germans in the world. Heimat zu sein. And that is something that also concerns me, is that these guys are so sophisticated in their use of language, and I have a feeling that most Americans are just completely unconscious of the fact that the word homeland was not part of the vocabulary of the United States before Bush and Rove decided to politicize 9/11. What are your thoughts on that, Frank? Yeah, okay.
I agree completely. Gets a little far afield from my point.
Yeah, I understand.
Bush just does not accept any responsibility, and I wonder why the Democrats don't point that out.
Yeah, well, I'm pointing it out. I'm not a Democrat, but I'm pointing it out.
Anybody besides you would point it out.
It's an important job of the media here, Frank. I agree. In fact, I would encourage you, if you are involved with the Democratic Party in any way in New Mexico, to contact your local elected officials, to contact your party officials, to say, you know, why don't you hold this guy's feet to the fire? And start pushing them to do so. I think Bill Clinton's comments on The Daily Show day before yesterday, where he said, you know, when you get hit, you have to hit back.
The other day interviewed by Blitzer?
Who's that?
George McGovern.
Boy, that's an oldie but goodie.
He's an elder statesman.
He really is.
Boy,
an elder statesman.
He's good.
He's a very wise man, you know.
He wrote some kind of book. Blitzer tried to tear him up, and he just said, you know, we don't, the United States of America does not go to war and make preemptive war. We just don't do it. We don't summon God in our speeches when we're talking about politics. This guy flies in the face of everything going back to the founding fathers, were the basis for the American democracy, and nobody will say anything except George McGovern.
Yeah. Well, and Frank and Tom, and there's a whole bunch of us, Frank. Frank, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And I got to move along here. Melissa in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Melissa, what's on your mind?
I just have one thing to say. I make a statement in relation to money being spent in Iraq and not being spent at home. I think we should vote for Bush as president for Iraq.
Okay, thanks, Melissa. Well said. I appreciate the call. George Bush for president of Iraq. Well, you know, he's put more time and effort, certainly, into Iraq ever since he came into office, according to Paul O'Neill, the former Secretary of the Treasury, than has anybody else. Has George Bush apologized for example, in 2000, saying, quote, "There are 43 million uninsured Americans, 4 million more than when the current administration, that would be the Clinton administration, took office. George W. Bush will reverse this trend by making health insurance affordable for hardworking, low-income families." And then, you know, the reality is a little different. You look at the U.S. Census Bureau and the USA Today. In the first 2 years Bush was in office, the number of uninsured Americans increased by nearly 4 million. That's the same as all 8 years of the Clinton administration. Since Bush took office, health insurance premiums have risen by an average rate of 12.5% per year. According to a major study, widespread adoption of Bush's major health care plan could drive up the annual deductible paid by workers. Have you heard an apology from George W. for ruining our health care system, or making it worse? The Bush-Cheney 2000 website. George Bush promised. George W. Bush will establish, this was in 2000. George W. Bush will establish the Healthy Communities Innovation Fund. Remember this? Healthy Communities Innovation Fund? To provide $500 million in grants over 5 years to fund innovative projects addressing targeted health risks, such as childhood diabetes. It polled really well. And so they used it, you know, during the election. We're going to create this fund. $500 million to go after serious targeted health risks like childhood diabetes. Here we are 4 years later. Never established the fund. Have you heard Bush say to the parents of children with childhood diabetes, with juvenile diabetes, you know, I'm sorry. I know I promised to spend $500 million and cure your child's illness, find cures. I haven't done that. I'm sorry. In 2000, George Bush promised that he would, quote, ensure that the federal government, which is the country's largest polluter, complies with all environmental laws, end quote. Have you heard him apologize for the fact that over the past 3 years, the Department of Defense has requested that Congress exempt it from environmental laws and regulations like the Clean Air Act? The exemptions were requested despite the fact that the Environmental Protection Agency has thus far declined to apply the policies to the military training facilities in question. In other words, it's getting worse. You know, in 2000, George Bush promised us that he would, quote, fully fund the Pell Grant program for first-year students by increasing the maximum grant amount by more than 50% to $5,100. This was his campaign promise in 2000. Have you heard him apologize for the fact that he has frozen the maximum Pell Grant at $4,000, $4,050, in his 2005 education budget? This is the third year in a row, by the way, that he has either frozen or cut the Pell Grants. Have you heard him apologize for not keeping that campaign promise? I have not. Maybe I missed it. If I did, give me a call. 1-866-889-8894 and tell me. Child welfare. George Bush in the 2000 election, he promised, he said, to encourage states to help families in crisis, I will provide states an additional $1 billion over 5 years for preventative services to keep children in or return them to their homes whenever safely possible. Well, as the Philadelphia Inquirer noted in March of this year, Bush has proposed allowing states to use the federal funds currently earmarked for foster care room and board payments to be used for preventative services. In exchange, states must accept a spending cap on the amount of foster care funding they received. Have you heard him apologize for not supplying that $1 billion that he said was going to be forthcoming after he was elected? I haven't. Maybe I missed it. In 2000, George Bush promised, quote, to provide energy assistance to low-income households and address short-term supply threats, that he would expand the low-income home energy assistance program, LIHEAP, by seeking the release of $155 million and directing a portion of oil and gas royalty payments to the program, costing $1 billion over 10 years. In other words, he says he's going to give over $155 million right out of the gate and $1 billion over 10 years to help low-income households heat their homes in the winter. This was his promise. But in the 2002 fiscal year, he cut funding for this program by $300 million, despite higher unemployment in one of the coldest winters in several decades. Have you heard him apologize for that? Maybe I just missed it. In an act of foresight and statesmanship, Senator Lugar and Senator Sam Nunn in 1991, this from the Bush campaign, realized that existing Russian nuclear facilities were in danger of being compromised. The next president must press for an accurate inventory of all this material. George W. Bush will ask the Congress to increase substantially our assistance to Russia in dismantling as many of their weapons as quickly as possible. This was the promise in 2000. It's still on the Bush-Cheney 2000 website. In fact, despite repeated claims this spring that he favors further expansion of the successful Nunn-Lugar program, Bush's proposed budget for fiscal year 2005 cuts funding for the Nunn-Lugar program by 10% and cuts the Department of Energy's Russian nuclear security funding by 8%. No, I'm sorry, we can't spend money on that, even though those nukes might end up in the hands of terrorists. After all, we have to have tax cuts for the wealthiest among us. I haven't heard him apologizing for that lie he told in 2000. Have you? 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom. Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term, but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
We'll be right back.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Based on clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof. The smoking gun could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
And welcome back. Have you heard George W. Bush apologize for the small mistake he made in 2000 when he said, my income tax cuts will benefit all Americans, but they are especially focused on low and moderate income families. Millionaires received an average tax cut when, in fact, millionaires received an average tax cut of $123,000. Those in the bottom fifth of earners received an average tax cut of $27. Those in the second to the bottom fifth, this is altogether, you know, the bottom two-fifths of the population, received an average of $317. On February 15th, 2000, by far the vast majority of my tax cuts go to the bottom end of the spectrum. And the reality? The top 20% of earners received 69.8% of President Bush's tax cuts. Do you remember in 2000 when George Bush said, as president, I will pay the debt down to a historically low level? As of July 30th, the national debt stood at $7,316,567,571,232.89, a record high. This year's budget will also create a record deficit, $455 billion, according to the White House. Have you heard him apologize for that misstatement? I haven't. Remember when George Bush said, and you can still find this on the Bush 2000 website, the Social Security surplus must be locked away only for Social Security. Yes, that's a verbatim quote. During 2000, this is the reality, the first fiscal year for which Bush was responsible, he spent $159 billion of the Social Security Trust Fund surplus. I haven't heard him say, you know, I'm sorry, I goofed. In 2000, he says, to restore confidence in government, I will attack pork barrel spending. I haven't heard him mention the fact that he has not vetoed one single bill. Even the Heritage Foundation, the right-wing Heritage Foundation, budget discipline clearly isn't a priority of this administration. So why pretend it'll get tough on frivolous measures like these? Haven't heard it. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. To Shelby for streaming us around the world. To our sponsors, to Mike Toth for our archives, and to Ben Birch and White Rose Society. Thanks to Shelby at radiopower.org. The folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Jay for our music. Thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering our program. Thanks to you for being here. See you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blood.